Gunsmoke TV producer John Mantley once referred to Chester as a dim-witted town loafer. But Parley Bear, who created and portrayed the character on radio for nearly 10 years, disagrees.
I don't think he was a dim-witted town loafer at all. He was lazy, but he still did his work, and he spun his wheels a great deal and kicked a lot of gravel. I would describe Chester as being a dependable non-thinker to this extent. If we had a hypothetical case with 9 desperados holed up, and Bill, as Matt Dillon had said, "Chester, you watch the back door. And as they come out, you plug number 1, 3, 5, and 7. Chester would have said, "Yes, sir." And as they came out, he would have said 1, bang. He'd have let 2 go, and he'd have gotten 3. He'd have let 4 go, and he'd have gotten 5. Even though maybe 2 and 4 were bearing down on him, he would have said, "Mr. Dillon said to shoot them others, so them was the ones I'm going to shoot." And that's what, but no, Chester was energetic. He was loyal, at times put upon by everybody but Dillon. As we played it, Chester was not really, he was never really deputized. Chester got Dillon out of scrapes every now and again. There was a pathetic tone written in Chester. Chester realized his shortcomings. I remember one script he did, I can't think of the name of it, but Chester saved Dillon. And as they rode back to town, he said, "You'd best not tell anybody about that, Mr. Dillon, because that it could embarrass you. If people was to know that I had saved you," he said, "we just won't talk about that." And I think that was basically Chester. He was loyal, sensitive man, who, much to Dillon's annoyance, put sugar in his rye whiskey and was overly fond of jelly. And as he confessed one time when Dillon said that chewing tobacco was a filthy habit, he confessed that he didn't really chew tobacco, that it was licorice. That was Chester, I think, and I tried to play him that way. As simple, but not a simpleton. Loyal, if not intelligent. The economy of the day got to him. Chester was never affluent. He had a great loyalty and pride. His family, I guess you would have been tantamount to sharecroppers or tenant farmers. I don't think they were ever great landowners. But Chester was fiercely proud of his family and defended them, and had an absolute adulation for Dillon. Dillon was the ultimate so far as he was concerned.
The part of Doc Adams was brilliantly played by veteran character actor Howard McNear.
Howard McNear probably is the most fascinating human being I've ever known in my life. He was a consummate actor. He was a consummate human being. And all of this wrapped up in a pixie-like body, a wonderful comic mind that would make a laugh out of anything in the world for, I guess, 10 solid years. He was the life of our cast. He and Parley combined were unbelievable in their making lightness and happiness and joy out of a common everyday experience. Howard and Parley are two people that everybody should know in their lives.
Bill named Doc, too. He was just Doc in there, and Howard McNear, who was so delightful in that role, but he played him with just a trickle of blood dripping from his fangs, and you got the feeling that Mephistopheles was looking over your shoulder a little bit as Howard played Doc, and Bill Conrad christened him Dr. Charles Adams, just, you know, for the cartoonist. Well, when you talk about Howard, all of the adjectives like wonderful, unique, magnificent come to fore. Howard, I think, was one of the most truly delightful people I've ever known, ever met, and I had never heard anyone who didn't like him. Everybody loved him. And he was an absolute asset to anything and everything he did. Later on, he became Floyd the Barber on the Andy Griffith Show. And he fell upon evil times. He had a series of strokes. He recovered from some, and then he would have some more. And it's to Andy Griffith's eternal credit that for a couple of years, when Howard was no longer ambulatory, he stayed on the show, and they would revolve scenes around him. He would be seated in his own barber chair or in a place out in front of his shop, but they always fixed it, accommodated the scene to Howard, and I think it's a great tribute to his ability as a performer and an actor that many people didn't know that he was suffering from any handicap at all, because he was sharp. He still had the same wonderful sense of humor, a real pixie sense of humor. And I can truthfully say that some of the happiest hours of my life were spent in his company. He lived between my house and the studio, and I used to pick him up and bring him back. And those minutes that we had week after week discussing the day's happenings or whatnot were marvelous. He was a man of strange attitudes at times, and in strange inconsistencies, and that's what added to his charm. Howard is a thoroughly conscientious man, prepared at all times with his work. I've never known him to give a bad performance. And I worked on many shows with him aside from Gunsmoke. We were on the air together, but he did a lot of lineups and escapes and whatnot. But he lived in absolute terror. And this I can't understand, because he was a graduate of the old stock company circuit, where you had to learn a new part a week while you were playing one, you know. But he was terrified that dialogue would be changed on him. And he had it specified that once he was given a part, that was it, and they wouldn't change lines on him on the set. And he didn't even like to write in changes on radio scripts. And that he abhorred change of any kind. And he sort of, he had developed an aura about himself as being very nervous and this, that, and the other thing. And he was a little on the hypochondriac side. He carried a variety of pills, which he was willing to share. I don't know how many people he started off on the, or gave them some malady that they didn't have through sharing his pills. I know he had a box of pills one day. I had a bad headache, and I asked for aspirin. He said, "You don't want to put that stuff in your stomach." He said, "That's not good." He said, "Here, take one of mine." He said, "Don't take that one. They cost 50 cents a piece, and besides, it's not for a headache." But he had a bottle of all shapes, sizes, and hues, and colors of pills. And I tell you, not only our business, but the world suffered a great loss when he was taken. And I don't know of anyone who is remembered more fondly by our profession than Howard.
Stories told about Howard McNear exemplify his wonderful wit and charm, and Parley Bear tells some of the best. Several years ago, Parley and Howard attended the funeral of Gail Gordon's mother, Gloria.
We went to this funeral, which was in Hollywood Cemetery, in a very small chapel, and the pews were very small. Only four people could sit in them, and they were very tightly squeezed in then. And as it came time for the show, I have to first of all say that in the old days of radio, you never had really achieved until you had what we called a conflict, that you had to get permission from one director to be late to his rehearsal or leave his rehearsal for time to go to another. You had finally arrived when you had conflicts, or when you had to pay a page to open an exit-only door for you to get from CBS to NBC in order to make the show. The conflict was the ultimate thing for an actor. Well, we were tightly packed into this pew, and as you do at a funeral, you remain quiet, and your tones are subdued, and your attitude too. And my watch was being repaired. Howard was on the outside, on the aisle. The funeral was set for 2 o'clock. And as we were sitting there, I leaned over to Howard and whispered, "What time is it?" And Howard, "What?" I said, "What time is it?" And Howard's reply was, "What's the matter? You got a conflict?" And I said, "Now, Cut out the nonsense, Howard. Tell me what time it is. Well, I remembered too late that Howard carried a pocket watch. My tongue's perspiring. And not a wristwatch. And so he had to lean way out, and I had to lean away from him. He's tugging to get this watch out, and as he pulled hard, the fob and the ring on the stem came out. There now. Are you satisfied? I said, well, it's not my fault. Why don't you wear a wristwatch like everybody else does? So he got the watch out, fixed it, put the ring back on, snapped the watch open, looked at it, snapped it closed, and put it back in his pocket. I said, well, what? Then what time is it? He said, I just looked. I said, but Howard, you didn't tell me. He said, they're not late. He never did tell me what time it was. Another funeral, I told you, a good friend had passed away, Will Wright. And we kind of got everybody on there. I was on the member of the board of directors for the American Federation of Television Radio Artists. Will had served on the board for many years, and we attended the service in a body. Now, Will was Presbyterian and also a Mason. And Howard went to the funeral with me, but he didn't sit with us on the board, but he sat with a very fine character actor by the name of Dick Ryan, who was a staunch Catholic. And as the service were on, they did half of Will's service Presbyterian, and the second half was a Masonic service. And when the service was over, we waited and we came out, and I saw Dick Ryan and Howard come out of the chapel. And Dick Ryan's face was just suffused with purple. He was really visibly upset, and I thought, well, I'm sorry Dick's upset. I knew that he and Will had been good friends, but it didn't seem possible that Dick would be that emotionally upset about it. And I walked with him over to his car, and I said, Dick, are you all right? And his reply was rather strange. He said, I will never sit by Howard McNair at another funeral as long as I live. Got in his car and drove off. And I said, when Howard and I got alone, I said, what did you do to Dick Ryan? And he said, oh, he's emotionally unstable. And I said, well, he's all upset. What did you do? He said, well, he just went all to pieces for no reason at all. He said, well, funeral was on, he said, as you know, it was first of all Presbyterian, and it was Masonic, and I just leaned over and asked Dick, I said, are you fellas going to demand equal time? And what had happened, Dick, in his monumental effort to refrain from laughing and guffawing outside, I saw him 2 or 3 days later, he said, my rib cage is still sore from that guy. He said, I nearly strangled to keep from laughing out loud. He said, that's a terrible thing to ask you at a funeral if we're going to demand equal time.
The pixiest charm of Howard McNair was even evident in where he went to church. Again, Parley Bear.
Howard was a tremendously religious man, but didn't really embrace any of the faiths as we know them today. He went to the church of his choice, which was 1 week one, or another week another, sometimes Unity, sometimes if there was a speaker he wanted to hear at the Emmanuel Baptist Church, he would go there. But when he passed away, his wife asked me if I would deliver the eulogy at his funeral, which terrified me. And she said, the only command I lay upon you is that it not be lugubrious, yet not be sad, that it would be something that Howard would like. And the chapel was pretty full. We were it was up at Forest Lawn. And I didn't go into the usual. He was born on this date and so on. But in eulogizing him, I said some of the things that I've said today, how wonderful he was, what a brilliant performer. And one thing led to another. I kind of got off my text, and I started to reminisce from the pulpit about some of the things that he had said and done. And the chapel was filled with friends of his. And as I told one story that had taken place there, it got a laugh. And that scared me, terrified me a little bit. And at the end of the thing, people, in recalling the wonderful times that they had had with Howard, I got chuckles and real laughs in this thing. And I finished the eulogy. I didn't take it upon myself to rewrite any of the Psalms, but I edited some, and I joined the several psalms to what I felt was a fitting tribute to Howard. And I said to my wife, I don't dare face Helen. I said, the last thing I wanted was to get laughs at a funeral. I didn't mean that. I said, I think I've committed a terrible thing. And as I walked over, Helen came up and she put her arms around me and she said, that's just exactly what Howard would have wanted. And it was an ironic thing that of all the things I've done, I think I got more letters of approbation from his friends saying how they had, if it were possible, had enjoyed a funeral. And I got a little note from Bill Conrad. He said, I know Howard loved you, but now he must adore you. And that was Howard. He was friendly and forgiving even in death.
Howard was a dream to work with. Not only did he have a great sense of humor, but he was a much deeper actor than just the superficial comedy. Howard's background was legitimate theater, which he loved, and he was able to play a great number of things. But I think one of the shows that showcases Howard's work more than any other would be a script that John Meston wrote called Cow Doctor.